From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Friday edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Palm, Neil McCready. Clark Ford Studio, closing your work week. Ole Miss Tennessee baseball, if Mother Nature permits, tonight, 7 o'clock. Forecast not looking great, but as of now, no doubleheader action has been scheduled. That's as of 8:04 on Friday morning, so if it happens in a couple hours, we'll deal with them. But anyway, as of right now, 7 o'clock. Quick scheduling thing, obviously available on ESPN3. I think ESPN's also doing that bases loaded thing tonight where they are rotating to each conference site for opening night of college baseball. So if you stay there for television, you can catch a little of everything. Basically a college baseball version of Red Zone tonight on one of the ESPN family of networks. March Madness going on. Arizona already out. Neil doesn't have to worry about Kentucky knocking them out in the next round. Kentucky gets the Bulls of Buffalo in the next round. So
Buffalo didn't just win the game.
Tore them up. Alan Green's former team.
Sean Miller was a little weird last night.
Was he?
Yeah.
I didn't watch. Actually, I saw nothing. I just saw it on Twitter after the fact. But anyway, a little bit of that today. Keith Kessinger going to join us, a member of the Ole Miss Radio Network. Had a lot of approval. We had him on last time, so talk to Keith again today in about 25 minutes or so on the show that's brought to you every single day by the Oxford Exxon. Highway 6 West in Oxford. A lot of people coming in town for baseball this weekend. Stop on your way in on Highway 6. Get refreshments, very clean gas station, good gas prices, ribs, lunch specials, and more, as well as maybe just a daiquiri if you want to take it to the game, sit in the outfield, get a few for the night. I think the weather's pretty good. The rain's not, but temperature's pretty good. It's a little warmer today. So check them out on Highway 6 West. And again, hopefully when you are coming in, you're driving a Ford from Clark Ford.
Hopefully you are. And if you are not yet, you should give Corey a call, 662-257-1900. That's the number to Clark Ford in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Ask for Corey. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. It is right to the bottom line. And then there's no haggling. It's just easy. And then you get your quote. It's up to you. You can shop it around. Or you can let the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for so many other listeners of our family of podcasts. And that's take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. Really simple. That's it. That's what you do. And we'll make it even better when you hear, when you get your quote, and you're finalizing your deal right before you finish everything. Tell Corey, hey, Corey, I heard about Clark Ford on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention any of our other three podcasts. They all have new ones that dropped yesterday. The Greatest Pod in the South, with presented by Cathead Distillery, with Jay Tate and myself. You can mention the Soft Verbal podcast presented by Billy's Pecans with Russell Johnson. He and I talked to Rob Cassidy on a podcast that dropped yesterday. Or you can mention the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden, a podcast that I typically host. Yesterday had Mike Dettillier of the WWL out of New Orleans a day before Tom Benson passes away in New Orleans. So we could have talked about that. Didn't obviously know that was coming as I'm breaking news here. I'm not God. I didn't know. So anyway, well, those are all there. Mention any of those to Corey and it's $500 off. The bottom line from your deal at Clark Ford, 662-257-1900.
Yeah, 36 hours or so in the sports world. Augie Garrido, Texas, all-time winningest coach in college baseball, passes away. Had a stroke last week, and then they sometime overnight, two nights ago, passed away.
Maybe the legend in college baseball coaching?
Yeah, I'd say so. Was at Fullerton for a while, and then very, very decorated at Texas. Obviously beat the Ole Miss team in 05 here.
Who else is even in that ballpark? Skip Bertman?
Skip Bourbon's definitely in there. Five titles. Yeah.
Anybody else?
Yeah. Rob Dedeaux, USC.
Oh, yeah. It's rarefied air.
Yeah. The guy that just retired from Stanford was there forever. I'm dying. I can't think of his name.
I'm sorry.
Mark, anyway. Scott Stanford. He's ish in that group. Probably not where these other guys are, but at least in the conversation, George Horton is a name that passes away. That, you know, he's at Oregon now, or at least was. He's moved around a little bit.
But I think if you mention legendary college baseball coaches to me, and we're doing playing trivia, right?
Yeah.
And you say that to me, you say topic, legendary
Ron Polk.
College baseball coach. Well, Ron Polk would come to mind. But I think the very first name that would have come to mind would have been Augie Garrido.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt there. I'm going to pull it up. And just, I'm curious, all-time winningest.
Whether that means it's one of those deals where.
Outspoken, around forever, multiple power programs.
Just name that comes to mind when you say so. It's like if you say professional golf, I say Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods.
All right, list of all-time winningest college baseball coaches. Augie Garrido first. He has 1,975 wins.
That's a lot of wins.
Mike Martin, Florida State, is second. He actually might pass Augie Garrido this season.
Well, he's a legend.
It looks like. He's never won a title is what keeps him whatever, but he's been to Omaha 1,000 times, yeah. But he hasn't won it. Gene Stephenson at Wichita State over the years. Took over a program that wasn't a program when he took it over.
Curly-headed, silver-headed.
Yeah, Mark McQuest, Stanford. He has 1,585 wins. He was at Stanford from 77 to 2017.
Okay.
In his career. Jim Morris at Miami's on this list. North Carolina's Mike Fox is on this list. Paul Maneri's already on this list. Paul Maneri has more. I didn't know this. And now, look, not all of it's at the D1 level. Paul Maneri has more coaching wins than Ron Polk already. Say already, he's been coaching forever, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
34 years. You wouldn't think Paul Maneri had been a head coach for 34 years.
Not when you see him, because he's a young guy. His dad is a charming – I hope he's still
Maneri?
Around.
Really?
I hate to say that, and then he's not. But I'm going to hope and I'm going to be positive today that he's still around. He's a charming guy. He and I sat in Tiger Stadium. I want to say, Chase, it was 2003. His dad's a Cubs fan.
Right.
And we sat and watched the NLCS during
– Did you really?
Yeah, during a LSU-Florida game.
Ron Polk, obviously, on the list here. Dedeaux, as I mentioned, Jack Leggett at Clemson is on this list. Ron Frazier at Miami on this list, coach forever with the Hurricanes. Kind of in that – he was in that group that tried to get college baseball a major sport. Frazier gets a lot of credit for a lot of different things. Actually, he – I think it was a Frazier book. I wrote about this last year. I think I'm right here. Frazier said something in a book or his book that led to Burtman and something about Bianco when Tim Clymer. I don't know. There's some Frazier connection to that whole deal last year. I don't remember the whole thing. But anyway, those are the ones at the top. There's a lot of guys actually that have more than 1,100 wins. But those are the Ray Tanner on the list at the bottom. But anyway. Yeah, I asked Mike about it yesterday. I'll play that clip now. I thought it was kind of interesting. Mike does not know Augie Garrido personally, which is I thought it was interesting how he doesn't know him. He doesn't have that heartstring moment necessarily, but he still had something to say about the coaching lesson legend. I'll play it here.
You know, anytime, you know, a legend, you know, of your game, you know, passes, and I didn't know Augie, you know, competed against him, you know, as an assistant at LSU and, you know, obviously here in 2005, but, you know, from a distance, you know, you respect the guy, not just because he's won more games than anybody that's ever coached, but how he did it. You know, I was just trying to explain to our guys, you know, how, you know, on the cutting edge, you know, back in the 90s, you know, he's the guy with, you know, Ken Revisa and talking about the mental game and, you know, explaining for the love of the game to these guys and how he's the coach in the other dugout. And, you know, and Kevin Costner saying clear the mechanism. All stuff that, you know, they're trying to do 20 years later that people, when we watched that movie, you know, didn't realize, you know, that this would be, you know, at the forefront of, you know, sports, you know, the mental game and being able to, you know, be present and all those things. Well, you know, that's one of the reasons that I think Augie was so good. And, you know, certainly, you know, champion, but, you know, what I thought was touching today was to read some of the tweets of, you know, his former players and, you know, how much they cared and what an impact that he's made, you know, on his life. So he touched a lot of people, and, you know, that's, you know, I think what everybody will remember about him.
I when I asked the question, I did not think we were going to get a full over the game reference, but we did. I remember he was the Yankees manager there, and
I'll fight anybody.
It all comes back to full over the game.
I'll fight you over that movie. I mean, you want to fight? Let's fight. I mean, not you and me, just in general. You want to come at me with that's a bad movie? I'm ready to throw gloves.
Well, it's funny you mention that because I think I caught Mike off guard. We finished the interview yesterday, and I think I didn't even turn my recorder off, and I said, what's your favorite baseball movie? He kind of looked at me, and he goes, why? And I was like, well, it's not a trick question. I'm just kind of curious. And he sort of laughs, and he goes, I don't know. What's yours? And we start talking and whatever, and Bull Durham got brought up, and he goes, you know, he said, I put Bull Durham in the DVD player years ago. And he said, I always liked Bull Durham. He's like, I sat down. And he goes, then I realized I've got a seven-year-old behind me. And he's like, he goes, as a parent, he goes, I really got to thinking about it. There's not a lot of good baseball movies that are actually about baseball. He goes, you know, Field of Dreams not really about baseball. He goes, you know, The Natural kind of, but not really. You know, everything's so mystical. He goes, there's not just a baseball movie. He goes, baseball, for whatever reason, hasn't produced good movies, per se. And so I started talking about it. I thought, it is funny how your perception changes as you get kids. You go, yeah, I can't really do that anymore. But he said, you know, for kids' purposes, The Sandlot, great baseball movie. That's about as far as I can go.
It's a good baseball movie.
It's fine, yeah.
It's fine. Yeah, because, like, Major League's got
it's crass.
Bull Durham's really good.
Bull Durham's a great movie, but
with
I
your
get
kid
it.
In the room, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of sex.
He was basically mentioning, you know, Catherine's behind him, and I mean, what, you know, come on.
Do you know Susan Sarandon? Trivia question. It's Friday. I'm sorry.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm on so much medicine that it doesn't matter. Susan Sarandon was going to get the role of Adrian in Rocky. Did you know this?
You know, I'm a Rocky historian, and I did not know this.
But she was considered too attractive.
They needed somebody
because back in the day, Susan Sarandon could rock the house.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, she's a little older now. She's still attractive, but so they cast
Talia Shire.
So if you're Talia Shire, you're like, you know, I got this because I'm not as good looking as Susan Sarandon.
Talia Shire was in what, Rocky, and what else was she in? She was in something else. Was one more.
She will forever just.
Because see, I keep getting her and Deborah Winger mixed up. This is not my era, so forgive me.
That's okay.
I'll look it up in a minute.
So anyway, there's your trick.
Bull Durham, the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is 15% lower than the critic score. Would you have guessed that?
No. I thought it was a really
97% from critics, 82% from the audience.
What For Love of the Game get, out of curiosity?
We've done this before.
Well, I can't remember anything today. I can't remember what I did yesterday.
For the Love of the Game, 1999, Kevin Costner, Kelly Preston.
Critics killed it, I bet.
They did. 46 from the critics.
Screw them. They don't know jack.
75% from the audience.
A little better.
A little better. I can't find a positive review.
Well, they're wrong. They're all wrong. The movie gets me in the feels every time.
Oh, it's a good movie. He didn't say it. I think that's Mike's favorite baseball movie. He wouldn't admit it.
Why?
But it sounded like that was his favorite baseball movie.
It's okay for a guy to admit that you kind of like a love story.
Because he pulled For Love of the Game off the tip of his tongue with Augie, and I get the reference, but it came out natural. It was, I mean, he quoted Clear the Mechanism. He had some understanding of that movie. It wasn't
It's got Vin Scully. It's got Kelly Preston, who's sneaky hot. It's cheesy, but it's... It just keeps you there. Yankee Stadium, old Yankee Stadium. It's bad, but it's so bad that it's good, and it's a love story, and you want him to win the girl at the end, and by God, he does, and it just, it's good.
Well, for critics, it ends, he throws a perfect game and gets the girl. Spoiler alert.
At least Kevin Costner, it always works out. He made Waterworld, and it didn't ruin his career.
No. Tin Cup, he hit the ball in the water 17 times. He didn't win the tournament.
Oh, that's true.
I have so many issues with that movie from a golf standpoint, so we'll stop here. But
this is where Jeffrey and I are on the same page. I don't go to the movies or watch a movie to be...
It's our difference in Boyhood. I loved Boyhood. You thought you'd been kicked in the teeth for 2.5 hours.
Boyhood hit me in all the wrong feels. I was so depressed at the end of that movie. Thinking about Boyhood right now makes me depressed. But I can watch For Love of the Game... I could watch it weekly.
I haven't seen it in a while, but
it's really good. It's just a good solid movie.
You know, it's almost actually half. The top critics panned it, But I'm seeing here 94 reviews counted, 43 were fresh, 51 were rotten.
I mean,
so not a complete abomination.
I can see why people would rip it apart. If you haven't watched it, this is your homework for the next couple of weeks. Get For Love of the Game and watch it. And just chill. It doesn't have to be perfect. The baseball's not perfect. It's just a movie.
It's
just a movie. I never asked you this. Speaking of baseball.
Yep.
I kind of consider you a baseball purist.
Okay. The minor league thing?
Yeah, and I don't care. It's minor league baseball, and nobody cares. And in the minor leagues, once they get past nine innings, they want to get done.
Yeah.
Do you like the rule?
He's speaking to the fact they're playing international rules like softball, where they're putting a runner on second base to start the inning.
That's correct. I'm sorry. I should have said that. That was really bad radio. You corrected me. Thank you.
Yeah, I do. Now, look, don't get it anywhere near Major League Baseball. Let's keep it here, and that's what bothers me.
Would you like it at college baseball?
I don't know. Let me think about it for a second.
Okay.
But from a minor league standpoint, I love it because it's about development. Get the game over with. There's no reason for a minor league game to go 17 innings. It screws with everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Organizations
are losing their mind when that happens.
Here's the deal, though. Everybody goes, oh, well, it's going to make everybody bunt. No, it's not, because both teams have the same statistical opportunity to bunt. So if you play for one run, the other team just plays for one run. You know what I mean? Like one run, two. I think it makes you play for a big inning.
I do too. Bunting a runner from second to third with nobody out drives me crazy.
Does it?
Oh, God. It's giving an out away. A base hit scores a run. A ground ball.
I mean, now you are statistically higher in that instance where you're just trying to score one run to bunt him to third to score the one run.
Okay, if it's a tie game and I'm the home team, maybe.
So that you, okay, in this extra inning situation, in the 10th, you get out of the top of the 10th, nobody scores.
Maybe
you're at the
I'm
bottom
bunting
half.
Him to third. Now, they are then going to walk two in a row and set up the force play.
Or at least one, for sure.
Yeah, I'm walking both, unless I just don't think my pitcher can throw a strike.
Yeah, I get a little weird with bases loaded. I'd rather just walk one and set up the force, but okay.
But I like the bases loaded, one out, ground ball's coming to the plate, and I'm getting an out.
Yeah. That's how Ole Miss got out of that game in the night against Georgia State was – they got in too much trouble where they walked the bases loaded with nobody out, They got a sharp shot back to the third baseman who just threw home, yeah. Gets the one out, and then they roll a double play, and right. Game's over.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm good with it. College base. Oh gosh.
If they started doing this in college, what would you think? Because college coaches hate the late extra inning games too.
I think I'm okay. I think I got to think about it a little bit, but no, my initial reaction is a positive. I'd be okay with it.
Well, that's your homework for the weekend. I want you to ask
Mike.
I want you to ask Mike Bianco that.
Okay. I'll wait for him to win a game and ask him.
Wait till they win one. Maybe even wait till they win a series on Sunday and then just go, hey, Neil wanted me to ask you something.
Yeah.
And that way, if he's mad, he can get mad at me.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
because he doesn't have to deal with me every day.
Like I said, he's caught me off guard when he goes, why? I was like, well, I didn't really think I needed a reason to ask you which favorite movie was. I was just kind of curious.
I've been with you for a decade. Is it okay for me to ask a personal question?
I was just kind of curious.
I didn't ask anything all that intimate. Your favorite movie.
Yeah. Well, Alex, I think it was just sort of a, huh? Like, because we'd been, like, breaking down minutia for 5 minutes, and all of a sudden, it was, anyway. All right, baseball's at 7 tonight. Kermit Davis's thing is Monday. Neil's got a good story on who the man is that is Kermit Davis. Talked to his daughter, talked to his colleagues, other people around the new basketball coach. So that's up at rebelgrove.com. Russell's got some recruiting up.
My thanks to Claire Johnson, by the way, who those of you who've never been a reporter don't know what this is like. I'd reached out to her through social media. She'd responded. It was all good. And she sent me I sent her a little message that said, hey, this is your friendly, please don't forget about me reminder. And she responded immediately with, I won't, I'll call you in 30 minutes. And about an hour and a half later.
For a reporter, is the most helpless feeling in the world.
And so about an hour, and I am not a stalker. Now, when I was younger, I was a stalker. Oh God, I'd destroy your phone. But as I've gotten older, I don't. And so I sent her another message that said, I promise I won't keep you more than 3 minutes. And she just responded with a smiley face and called right away. And she's like, I would have forgotten. I'm like, I know your phone has blown up. It's been a big day in your family. Oh, I get it. This is literally all I need. And she's like, no, I've had all the time in the world. I didn't keep her long because I don't like keeping people long.
Yeah,
she's very, very, very charming. Could not be nicer. Those of you who are hung up at all about this Mississippi State Ole Miss thing, and I get it, it's a big rivalry and it's nasty and all that stuff. I get it. and Kermit Senior coached at Mississippi State, and I'm sure there are a lot of wonderful memories. And Kermit played at Mississippi State, and I'm sure there are a lot of wonderful memories. If you are concerned about whether their loyalties on the court, if you're concerned about that, go to the doctor, get some help. If you're concerned about where the family's loyalties will be, I can assure you from talking to Claire Johnson that the loyalty will be with the blood and not with alma maters. Now, I promise you that. And I can't say everything I know because I talked to a lot of people for this story. There won't be a person in that building. I'm going to say it this way. Whether it's the hump, whether it is the pavilion, whether it is Bridgestone Arena or wherever the NCAA, the SEC tournament may be, or God forbid the NCAA tournament, where some of you people would just need IVs. But no offense, be like Cubs Cardinals in the NLCS. I would just say,
I still kind of hate we didn't get that Ole Miss State Super Regional a couple years ago.
I was cheering for it. Because I'm a mean son of a bitch, I guess. There won't be a person in that building who wants to win more than Kermit Davis. You read into that what you want to read into it. There might be people in that building who want to win as much, but those will be some really driven, dedicated sons of bitches. Pardon my language. He wants that game something different. Read into that what you will. If those of you who are thinking that's going to be a problem, if anything, I'm looking at futures on schedules, and I'm finding who Ole Miss plays after State, and I'm taking that team on a letdown.
So it's funny you said that about not wanting to harass people. It's amazing what's kind of happened even in 10 years, because we've become as tried to be as – evasive as possible with people. Hey, I need you, but let's whatever. Because I think I've told you a story on the podcast. I mean, we probably hadn't been working together 18 months or maybe not that long, however long it was. And that day Jeff Scott committed. And committed to like 9 o'clock that night. And Jeff was not one to answer the phone a whole lot. It was bad. And you basically sent me his number and I wrote back. I texted him like he didn't answer. And you said, call him every 2 minutes. And I was like, I don't want to call him every 2 minutes, but okay, you know, we'll call him every 2 minutes.
And that was old school journalism. Yeah. You know, just drive them crazy till they took
and
the
eventually
call.
They will answer and because you're driving them.
Oh my God, this dude's not going to stop. And so you take the call and
you get what you need and you
like,
move
I
on.
I guarantee
your day.
If you talk to Parrish Offord, he'd tell you the same thing. And Parrish is as nice and calm a person as you'll meet. And that's just what you did back in the day.
You just called him.
You don't really anymore. Now it's a little more different.
Yeah. So. Anyway, we're going to go to Keith Kessinger here in a second. First, I'll tell you the podcast brought to you in part by Master Cuts Lawn and Landscape. A couple different offers for podcast listeners. $50 off a pressure washing job of 2,000 square feet or more. Or if you sign an annual contract for them to take care of your yard year-round, they will do your driveways and sidewalks for free. As I've been telling you for a week or so, you probably don't realize how dirty those are until you get them clean. 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com.
Everybody knows State Farm for being the number one insurer in auto, home, and life insurance, but did you know State Farm has a bank which allows them to do auto financing? Recently, State Farm has had a rate reduction in their commercial insurance rates, so give Romero Miller State Farm a chance to compare all of your policies, your commercial insurance rates, your business insurance policies, your rental properties, life, home, auto, all of that. If you have insurance needs in Tennessee or Mississippi, or if you just want to compare rates, give Romero Miller State Farm a call, 662-893-1212. The podcast also brought to you by Journey Business Solutions. If you are a business with a high-ticket product or service, pardon me, whether that's HVAC, dentist, surgeon, flooring, furniture, etc., Ben Brown and his team have the best financing solution for your customers. Their program accesses 14 national lenders with one very easy online application. With rates as low as 4.9%, terms that extend to 7 years, loan amounts up to $100,000, and credit scores down to 580, they will get more of your customers the money they need so you don't lose a sale. To hear more about this, call Ben, 443-935-5013. He's waiving the setup fee for Oxford Exxon podcast listeners. That's a $500 savings, so call him today. The podcast also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website, msbnkr.com, or by searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. Super Lawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state, so you know you're getting a good one when you get Gambrell and Associates. They handle Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or in Oxford at 662-281-8800.
Now, Keith Kessinger on the Billy's Pecans hotline. Keith, appreciate the little time this morning. Neil and I were talking about it a few minutes ago. I think you'll appreciate this because you talked to him probably more than I do. So we're talking to Mike Bianco yesterday, and I'd ask him about Augie Garrido to start the little media gathering. And then he mentioned Flew Over the Game, obviously Garrido and the other dugout coaching the Yankees in the movie. And when we got done, I said, Mike, what's your favorite baseball movie? And he looked at me really weird. I caught him off guard, and he goes, why? And I was like, well, I didn't really have a reason behind it. I don't know. I mean, whatever. And we start talking. And I think he's not really a personal guy. You know, he's kind of in the minutia when you talk to him. I think a personal question, even as small as your favorite baseball movie, did kind of catch him off guard a little yesterday.
Well, it's always my nightmare scenario in the postgame to get an answer of why. So I try to avoid any question that could possibly come back with an answer of why. And so far, so good. Now, he probably got me nervous for tonight after the game that he's going to come back. But, yeah, I do think that he especially when he's between the lines. Again, I've known Mike and Cammy for a long time, and we get to see him outside of the baseball setting. And he's a different guy then. But you could catch him between the lines, I think, and throw him something that he's not expecting, and you get an answer of why.
Did you ever run into Augie at any point during your time?
I did not, other than like coaching conventions and hearing him. I did not know him personally. Certainly, legendary coach, and did you know, when you win more games than anybody has in one of the major three sports, obviously you have left a lasting legacy. He has touched the lives of, you know, thousands of people that he has coached, and certainly thoughts and prayers, obviously, to his family in what I'm sure is a difficult time.
What is your favorite baseball movie?
Why? I think because in that same time frame I was playing minor league baseball, I think probably Bull Durham, just from a pure entertainment factor, and actually I was playing very shortly after that in the Carolina League and playing in that stadium. I would think that's probably one that, at least off the top of my head, there was some things in there that were obviously relatively true, and then there was a lot of movie things in that movie as well.
I'll be careful with the way that I ask this question. How realistic is Annie Savoy's character?
I am sure that there's an awful lot of that. There's probably some definitely some realistic things in that character.
Do you like For Love of the Game? Where do you fall on that one? Be careful here with your answer.
Wait, I'm thinking we're going to talk Tennessee, Ole Miss.
We're going to get there.
Come on. Weekend.
You baseball people are so worried about
two thumbs up.
You baseball people are so worried.
Movies now.
You're so worried that someone's going to ask you a personal question. Do you like For Love of the Game? I'm not asking you, hey, what are your thoughts on abortion? I'm asking you, what are you? Do you like For Love of the Game?
And now I'm getting yelled at.
Yeah. Podcast, well, it's because you get mad about it.
The answer, Neil. The answer is yes. It was just like some kind of torture treatment, enhanced interrogation going on the phone here. So, but I do like the movie, Neil.
It's a great movie. Thank you. Great answer. Y'all can continue now.
I think that's actually Mike's favorite, even though he wouldn't admit it, because he kept quoting it yesterday when we were talking. So. Just saying.
All right, can I ask you? Can I ask you one more baseball question? Can I ask you two more baseball questions before we get to Ole Miss, Tennessee?
Sure.
What do you think about? I know Chase and I were just talking about the minor league rule, where they're going to start the extra innings with the runner on second because the minor leagues want to get done. No organization wants their minor league guys playing 19 inning games. So I get it. I get it at that level. Do you ever see that happening in the college game, in the major league game at all, the extra inning thing where you start the runner on second with nobody out?
I can't imagine that's the scenario. Now, if you'd asked me if I'd have been calling the Texas A&M UT Arlington game the other night when it was nothing in the 18th, I probably would have been all for putting the guy on second base at that point. But no, I don't. And I agree that the minor league part, there's really two parts of that minor league, I think, equation is, yes, they never want to have to figure out a way to figure out who's pitching tomorrow, because you can't call somebody up from rookie league just to throw an A-ball game. So that's certainly part of it. And the other part of it is, quite honestly, the wins and losses just don't really matter in minor league baseball. And so a way to figure out how to not end the game in a tie, but to try to get it done quicker, certainly makes sense at that level. I don't think, you know, certainly when you're talking about major league baseball or college baseball, where the wins and losses, and particularly college baseball, where every game obviously makes an enormous difference, it would surprise me. But, I feel very certain I won't get a vote on that, but I would be surprised.
I don't know how much you hang out on social media. It's been a hot topic on social media the last couple of days. Carter Capps, who's now with the Padres, used to be with the Marlins, has that funky delivery, you know, where he rubs the ball kind of now against the front of his body, for lack of a better term, and kind of takes a little skip before he throws it. Have you seen this?
I have not, Neil, okay. But now you're going to make me have to look that up, but I have not.
Well, you're a baseball guy, so you will actually appreciate that question then. So when you get a chance, that can be your homework. Look up Carter Capps and look at his – he changed his delivery. He does that funky deal where he chased – help me describe this. He kind of comes set.
He reloads about 58 feet from the plate. He kind of takes a little skip, and then his back foot replants probably a foot to a foot and a half in front of the mound, and in the past, they've said it's legal.
No, I have not seen that. And I will have to do some homework, and I do not know. I will say this, just generically speaking, certainly if your stuff is not overwhelming, and his may or may not be, I do not know the guy. Obviously, he's in the major league camp. He's got stuff. But anytime you can deceive a hitter, anytime you can throw a hitter's rhythm off, and obviously what you're describing unquestionably would be something the hitter is not used to seeing, that is a huge benefit to the pitcher. And so if he has come up with something unique and rule bending based on what you're telling me, then you know he's probably got an angle there to get guys out.
Who's the most deceptive guy you ever faced?
The most deceptive guy I ever faced was probably in his own way, was Ramon Martinez, Pedro Martinez's brother.
I remember him, yeah.
He would occasionally speed his motion up. He would sometimes do the, turn his back to you when he was throwing it to the plate. You were never quite sure exactly when the ball was going to come out of his hand. And like I said, you see guys on deck and you're timing, you're trying to get the foot down at the right time. And then you get to the plate and, everything that you thought you knew, you didn't know anymore. So he was a guy that was kind of in that, a little bit like that. Plus, he had a ridiculously good changeup, and that is should be an illegal pitch, I believe, in the game. But other than that,
his
motion was well, yeah, because, when a guy really throws a changeup, can really throw it, nothing slows down in his motion, the arm speed is the same. And then for whatever reason, when it's below your waist, and I'm sure there's a scientific reason for that, but I can only tell you as a hitter, it looks like a fastball. And, it just does. And you start to swing like it's a fastball, and, the ball's not there. And you can tell yourself to stay back, and you can, but if there's no giveaway and it's thrown down, it is just almost impossible to hit, unless you're guessing. And obviously, that's certainly sometimes something that you have to do.
Well, I'll give you this because you'll enjoy seeing this. It's Pitching Ninja.
I actually just text you, Keith. There's a video that I just sent you a text of Carter Capps.
His name is Rob Friedman. He is Pitching Ninja, and as much of a baseball guy as you are, I'm not. I mean, I love baseball, but I'm maybe one gazillionth as good as you were. I could watch the GIFs and stuff on Pitching Ninja all day. I go down that rabbit hole, and I look up, and it's 10:30 in the morning, and I started at 9, so I get mad at myself. But it's like you see the slow mo of Noah Syndergaard's changeup, and I would retire.
Right,
I would just retire. I'd walk away and retire.
Well, so Chase, I am looking now at the video you sent me.
Okay,
and that is, And so they are saying that is a legal pitch?
Yes. That,
for him to throw the ball in front of home plate. I mean, to throw the ball in front of the rubber in that manner, huh?
He has pitched like that without penalty. The union or the baseball league or the rules committee or somebody came out this week and said they have essentially they have – tightened on him, but no one's really sure exactly if that delivery is still going to be legal or not. It's kind of a hot topic right now.
I don't see how it can be.
No, I don't either. I mean, I've always been under the impression that you basically had to be in contact with the rubber as you're throwing the ball, and that motion certainly doesn't look like, well, he's not. He's nowhere near the rubber when he's
Yeah, he's 2 feet off of it.
That is, he is absolutely has gained ground towards the plate when he's throwing the ball. That is something else. Wow. Yeah.
So
I got to crawl off under my rock sometimes and like look at you guys need to be sending me stuff.
No, it just crazy. you're indicating that you have a life, and that's all that's happening here. And I will sit and watch Pitching Ninja for literally 2 hours a day and look up and go, why am I so unproductive?
I'll be sure not to get on Pitching Ninja because I do have enough in real life going on that I probably don't need to spend 2 hours watching guys throw changeups and curveballs and sliders. So I'll probably avoid that.
I'll say this, then I'll stop. They have this Clayton Kershaw three-pitch overlay, fastball, slider, curveball, and the release and arm speed and everything is exactly the same. I'm telling you, there's a money to be made as a therapist for the opposing hitter immediately after they face that guy. You have no chance.
Right. Well, I mean, there's no question. That's why hitting is so difficult, and obviously that would be a perfect demonstration of why. When a guy's arm speed, release, everything looks the same, but the ball doesn't end up the same spot, and you've got tenths of a second to make that decision and get the bat to it, it can be quite a challenge.
Take a break in our talk with Keith. Today, the podcast is brought to you in part by Community Mortgage, Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, and Chattanooga. 30 years old this year, and all underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. Also, a leader in condo financing, and ask about the float down option. So you get the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get that lower rate. 662-234-2704 or JLOWE at communitymtg.com.
The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, that's the place to go. They've got all the Nissans you might be looking for, whether it's the new 2018s, a previously owned model, or maybe you were in the leasing market. They can take care of you at Grenada Nissan, just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Go to Harry's sites, HarryAlexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab, top left. Filter through by what you might be interested in or looking for. The results that you will see are updated daily. And then you get those and send him an email. He'll take it from there. It's ha@harryalexander.com. Harry's with RE/MAX Legacy Realty. Been in Oxford more than 4 decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better than he does. He'll take great care of you. Rebel Nation 2018 is the year of the fan. Ole Miss Athletics wants to showcase your stories and recognize you, the Ole Miss fan base. Exciting prizes and experiences throughout the year will be featured on omyearofthefan.com and updated often. So be sure to visit omyearofthefan.com. Ole Miss and Tennessee baseball this weekend at Swayze starts tonight at 7, as Chase has been saying. Tickets available at olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com. Kermit Davis will be formally introduced to Ole Miss fans as your new coach, Monday, 5:30, Chase? 5:30 at the Pavilion. I think they said food and...
T-shirts.
And vodka. No vodka. Just food and T-shirts available at the Pavilion for those of you who want to welcome Kermit Davis to Oxford. Now back to our friend Keith Kessinger on the Billy's Pecans Hotline on the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
Decent segue there as we do talk about Ole Miss, Tennessee tonight, 7 o'clock. Rebels off 17-1 start. Not a lot of negative to talk about, but I want to ask you this because DeLuccio does his weekly thing for us, and he was telling me early in the week that he felt like, for the most part, the approaches team-wide, and I get every player's not the same, so we're just kind of grouping them together for the ease of this, have been much better. He has some concern because they haven't seen a lot of heartbreaking balls. They haven't seen the change-ups that they saw last year. I guess to this point, have you seen improved approaches, and what do we not know yet about this team because of opponents they have faced?
Well, I mean, I obviously David has seen this, you know, at least half of the same things I've seen because he doesn't get to see the road games. I think there's certainly a lot of validity in what he says. I would say unquestionably this team has swung the bat better, whether that is strictly approach, whether that is, basically an entire team returning and a year's worth of experience, simply becoming better hitters, physically getting stronger, understanding the game a little bit more. I do think there are several guys in particular that have become more aggressive, realizing that at this level, going up and just trying to work the count and getting yourself down in the count's really probably not a real productive way to hit. And I think that there's, through no fault, I think, of what they tried to do with this schedule, the way the schedule has turned out, I don't know how many quality arms we've seen. I mean, the eyeball test to me is probably not a ton. Not a lot of guys that would, you know, be weekend starters in the SEC, and not a lot of bullpen arms that would be guys that would throw a lot of innings coming out of the bullpen in the SEC. Having said that, that doesn't mean these guys aren't going to hit those guys. I mean, they haven't faced them. And so I think that there's reason to be very optimistic about what we have seen from an offensive standpoint with this team. I mean, you know, are certain guys going to be hitting four something a month from now? Probably not. But is this team going to be, you know, a much more offensive team than they were last year? I think that is probably very likely.
The thing, too, is that just from a quality at bat standpoint, there's not really any holes. I mean, 1-9, they've been able to kind of give it something, whether that's a hit or a ground ball to the right side or something. Whereas last year, there were several spots where you just weren't getting much of anything. They're not striking out much, and they're kind of doing what is necessary given the situation, it seems like.
Well, and I agree completely. I mean, right now, they are not relying on one or two guys in the middle of the order. And boy, if those guys don't have a good night, it's going to be a long night. And, you know, we've all seen teams that were like that. And certainly last year's team probably wasn't one or two, but it was probably three or four. And if they didn't have good nights, or if one of the other guys didn't have, you know, a night that wasn't typical, then it was going to be a long night offensively. Right now, this team, and it really is more than 1-9, because, as you know, Chase, there's been a lot of platooning. I mean, there's a lot of guys that have played, two guys at second, two guys at third, a little bit of DH stuff going on, and all of them are hitting. I mean, basically everybody that comes in is having good at-bats, swinging well. And I think the strikeouts, in large part, and again, this is because of, in some ways, because of an offensive philosophy I just strongly believe in, is typically the more aggressive you are, the less strikeouts you get, because you just simply don't get down the count. I mean, let's be honest, if you don't get the two strikes, you don't strike out. And so this team is very much attacking fastballs early in the count, attacking bad breaking balls. And when you do that, you don't strike out, because you're putting the ball in play before two strikes.
Is, from a staff standpoint, a bullpen standpoint, we had really high expectations. Has it been kind of as expected for you? Anything stood out or surprised you through 18 games?
No, I mean, I think on paper, you certainly felt like this team, if they could hit at all, and if the defense at second and third, which were guys that hadn't played, you know, were going to play well enough that the pitching was going to be really good. And I know you didn't ask me about this question, but since I said it, the defense at second and third, I think, has just been incredibly good. So that's been a plus for this team. And then, yes, the pitching's been excellent. I mean, you know, I've heard you talk about, Chase, that Ryan Rollins in the last couple of weeks, Mike Bianco has told me post-game, you know, he's just been okay. Now, obviously, the okay on Ryan Rollison's scale is still pretty doggone good. Mm-hmm. But I think that tells you that they do think there's more in the tank for that kid. And obviously, if there is, then that would be a huge benefit on Friday nights to be able to go out there and win that 1-0, 2-1 game. The bullpen depth, I think, is the thing that jumps out probably the most at you. I always put myself in that other dugout, and I think, you know, that the coach over there, depending on how good his scouting report is always thinking, man, if we can just get this guy out of the game, man, we'll get to that next guy. Well, the truth of the matter is, every time Ole Miss brings a guy in, he looks just like the guy before. I mean, he's going to throw 90-94, and he's going to throw a slider in the zone. He's probably going to locate a changeup, and, you know, he's going to throw strikes. And that is the statistic, you know, when you look at the Ole Miss stats that just to me jumps out at you is that strikeout to walk ratio is just almost silly. I mean, it's just amazing to have the kind of arms that Mike is throwing out there, and yet, I mean, they're all in the zone all the time, and so you're not hurting yourself. You're playing defense. The stuff is good. Now, I think the pitching's legit. I mean, you know, are they going to dominate every time out? Every time a bullpen guy comes in, is he never going to give up a run? No, because that's not baseball. The other team's trying too, but I think the pitching's really good.
Yeah, they're leading the conference right now in strikeout to walk by almost half a strikeout per walk, which is amazing. I mean, that's
I've never seen numbers, Chase, like they've run up through 18 games. I mean, they just don't walk anybody, and most everybody out there's, you know, strikeout numbers are absurd. I mean, look at Krejci. I mean, he's 18 strikeouts, one walk. I think that's right. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think that's right after the other day. You know, it's just remarkable some of those guys when they come in the game. I mean, they just don't hurt themselves. And yet, when you can get a strikeout, and obviously both you guys know this because you're baseball guys, you can get out of innings. I mean, if you're not giving up bloop hits because you're striking guys out, you can come in with guys on second and third, and you can get out of innings. So the strikeout stuff is great. The fact they don't hurt themselves with walks is tremendous. And you have to believe that at least the non-walk part should be able to continue no matter what kind of competition you're facing.
Yeah, and then Brady Feigl, I think he's 25-2 right now through his four starts, if I've got that right. So yeah, it's all across the roster.
Yeah, and so happy for Brady because you know, a guy that, as you know, Chase, certainly could have left last year, and probably I would think some people probably advised him. You know, he has not been a weekend guy here. At least he started as a weekend guy, never has finished a season as a weekend guy. But decided to come back, really personable, nice young man that it just couldn't be happier that he's gone out there and been, and I think it's probably not arguable at this point, he's been almost his best starting pitcher through the first four weekends of the season.
I think a lot of the games they've been in, they've showed a lot of resilience. They've come back. You know, Murray State would have been an easy game to lose. You had a gaudy record and whatever. They bounced back from that weird Long Beach State opener where they ran like crazy. They would have lost more games last year just from a middle standpoint. They've been able to kind of battle back better than I saw last year. Maybe that's just maturity. Maybe that's you know, deeper talent throughout the lineup. I don't know the reason, but they are certainly a more resilient club this season.
I think that you've probably nailed it with the two most obvious answers is guys that have been through it. When you've seen situations and you know what didn't work, sometimes it's a whole lot easier to go out there and do something different or believe in something different. I think the talent obviously makes a difference. It does in all sports, and I think Ole Miss does. So far, Ole Miss has been the more talented team every time they've stepped foot on the field this year, and so certainly that has made a difference. And let's not take away coaching matters. And I think there was an off season of emphasis on doing the little things, making winning plays. I mean, Mike Bianco's talked about it post games a lot. You know, make winning plays, make a winning pitch, move a runner, make a defensive play after you've struck out to save a run. I mean, and they've done that. And, you know, I would think there's probably, and have to go back and look at the schedule, but four or five games that could have gone either way at this point, and they've only lost one of those five. And certainly if you can continue that for the rest of the season, you know, it's going to look really good at the end of the year.
Even though it's not the best team in the SEC, it's going to be a step up in competition tonight when Tennessee comes to town, a team that was 11-6 or something headed in. I'm assuming you've at least gave a casual glance. Anything stick out about the Volunteers?
Well, I mean, you know, first year Tony Vitello, the coach, and obviously his background's very good with some really good programs at TCU and Arkansas, the last couple stops for him as an assistant coach. And so you're never quite sure in that first year what you're going to get out of a guy. It was a roster that initially at Tennessee was supposed to be a small ball type team. I mean, that's what Dave Serrano thought he was going to bring to the SEC. I know, you know, last couple of years he was trying to get away from that, realizing that probably wasn't going to be a successful strategy in a league full of big athletes that the small ball just didn't work very good against. But you got to believe there's some of that still on this Tennessee roster. You know, they look like they hit okay. I mean, I think in the 260s team batting average. I think they're starting a guy tonight that started one game all year from Mississippi, I think, from Ocean Springs, Mississippi, that's a freshman. So, you know, he'll either be really ready or very nervous, depending on how that plays out. But I think you're right. They will be still likely the most talented team Ole Miss has played up to this point, whether they look like a really good SEC team or not. And they get to start this SEC season just like everybody else does, 0-0. I think they're actually 12-6 coming into tonight. But and record-wise, I actually think that may be the best team that we played on our schedule this year. Like I said, through no fault of trying to schedule teams, it's just worked out that some of those teams haven't had very good years.
Yeah, it's funny how that works out. I mean, last year, same kind of thing happened. East Carolina started 0-13 or something after being in a Super Regional the year before. I mean,
I mean, you schedule these things out 2 and 3 years in advance, and so you're trying to, you know, get a nice mix of scheduling, and obviously, you know, the Long Beach is a program that historically is very good, and, the eyeball test to me was probably not a great Long Beach State team. You were out there, too, but you certainly weren't anticipating Long Beach to have a losing record and Tulane to be right at 500, and Winthrop, a team that won their league last year, to be well below 500. So, but you can only play the games that are scheduled, and, you know, they've won 17 out of the 18 that they played. There are plenty of good games coming up in the next 10 weekends that we'll know a lot more about the team here in a couple of weeks.
Mike Bianco would probably want to slap me if I ask him this question, and you probably will too, but I'm going to ask it anyway because my subscribers are curious and you know more about it than I do. He hasn't allowed an earned run, so this is going to sound really crazy. How do you see Dallas compared to last year? Everything looks just a tick off from when I've seen him at his peak.
Well, I mean, certainly the radar gun would tell you that Dallas Wolfolk is a tick or two down from velocity standpoint where he was last year. I mean, we saw a lot of mid-90s. My understanding with Team USA this summer, there was some mid to upper 90s with Dallas throwing. Took a lot of time off in the fall. You know, he had a busy schedule, took some time off in the fall. And then when he started throwing spring, the velocity was down some. I don't know if that had something to do with it. He does physically look a little bigger than he did last year on the mound. You know, I don't know. And look, you also can't discount, Chase, these guys are pitching for millions of dollars. I mean, they're wanting to win for Ole Miss, and they're wanting to do that. But to pretend that when you look up in the stands and there's 30 scouts with radar guns and video cameras every time you come in a game, understanding that, you know, you want one of those guys to take you high, some guys respond differently than others, I only know Dallas a little bit from being around the team, obviously, for the last 3 years, and you know, the few times that we talk either in the hotel or whatever. He doesn't seem like a guy that would affect too much, but you just never know, you know, how that does. And maybe you're trying to overthrow, you know, maybe you're trying to do something that you haven't done before because this is your money year, and to pretend that's not a factor is just probably not being realistic. Having said that, getting the 27th out, you've probably heard me on the radio before say it, said it as a coach, and I'll always believe it, is the hardest out to get in baseball. And there's some guys that can get the 24th out and look absolutely fantastic doing it, suddenly can't get 25, 26, 27 nearly as easily. Dallas Wolfolk's been a guy who's gotten out number 27 a lot of times. And until he stops getting out number 27 with your team in the lead, I think you run the big guy out there every single time.
Last thing, appreciate the time. I think you're in Murfreesboro. Kermit Davis, obviously the head coach. You're a basketball guy. Just some thoughts on him.
Well, I did two games at Murfreesboro last two times. I've done both games at Murfreesboro times that we have played middle there. And I couldn't have been more impressed with the way his team prepares before the game, the way his team played during the game. Very disciplined, played very hard, obviously played very well against Ole Miss those two times. You know, unquestionably, for me, the two times that I have literally been on the floor watching his teams play, couldn't have been more impressed with the way they played. And so, from that standpoint, I, as an Ole Miss fan, certainly very excited about seeing what he can do with this program. And then, as you said, just being around the game of basketball, doing some Ole Miss basketball games, very, very well thought of basketball coach. I mean, just extraordinary. You just don't talk to anybody that doesn't think the man can really, really coach. And so, you know, certainly a fan of Andy Kennedy personally, and Andy did a lot of good things here. you know, the wish and hope for all the Ole Miss fans, me being one of them, and as a former player, is that Kermit can somehow, some way build on that and do something really special here.
Yeah. I appreciate it, bud. We'll see you tonight.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thanks to Keith for his time today. The podcast is also brought to you by Tyson Drugs, TysonDrugs.com in Holly Springs. Go fill out the forms online. Don't really have to talk to anybody. Get it delivered to you, whether it's Sildenafil or their other options. You also get hometown customer service with Tyson Drugs in Holly Springs and also in Oxford now, G&M Pharmacy on South Lamar. They deliver local, and they will take care of you. I've become a customer. You should, too. Again, 662-252-2321, TysonDrugs.com.
Keith joined us on the Billy's Pecans hotline. Billy's Pecans has the perfect crunch for every palate. It is a perfect gift for corporate clients, presents for your staff, tokens of goodwill for a referral from 5 to 5,000 orders. Billy's Pecans will handle it all with expertise and excellence and their signature Southern style with items at every price point. You simply can't go wrong. You can try the assorted gift bags. You can try the party trio, pecans and chocolate for an especially sweet gift. Additionally, Billy's Pecans will customize your packaging with your company or organization's logo affixed as a sticker to their round boxes so your brand is front of mind and their decadent flavors are there to back it up. Homemade treats, easy ordering, professionally packaged, shipped fresh and direct. It's the process of doing business with Billy's Pecans and more, and it couldn't be any more satisfying. Their gifts, I mean, their products are incredible. Cheese straws, pecans, chocolates, like I said, it's all there. Billy'sPecans.com, or you can call 1-800-624-7404. The podcast also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB is offering one-year CDs at 1.75% annual percentage yield, three-year triple option CDs paying 2.01% APY. With that three-year term, customers can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if OUB's three-year rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Last but not least, the podcast is brought to you by the Moonlight Grahams. They are a brand new folk band from Nashville, Tennessee, started by Ole Miss grad John McCann. The album was released on March the 2nd. It's on Spotify. It's on iTunes. What it is an organic and genuine style of music that features the banjo, the acoustic guitar, and the pedal steel. If you like the Avett Brothers, if you like Mumford & Sons, you'll love the Moonlight Grahams. Make sure to like their Facebook page, their Instagram page. Share it on your Spotify playlist. Stay tuned for shows that'll start playing in Nashville and starting with this one on April the 28th. It's the World Music Nashville at 7 p.m. The Moonlight Grahams will be right there.
Yeah, looking at Tennessee, Keith said they're 12-6. I'll take his word for it. Going into the week, dead last in the SEC in batting average there. We're hitting .266 entering the week. Ole Miss at .300, about middle of the pack in the league. Texas A&M hitting .328 as a team. To lead it, A&M also leading the league in ERA as well, 2.05. Ole Miss at 2.27, and then Tennessee again at the bottom. This won't win games. A 4.42 team ERA for the Volunteers, and then apparently starting a true freshman tonight. They are searching right now. It doesn't get much better also in the fielding percentage department. They're next to last in the league in fielding.
So we get this right. They don't hit. They can't pitch. They can't field, and they're throwing a freshman.
Yeah.
Other than that, how was the play, Mrs. Kennedy?
So if you had a money line tonight, Mrs. you'd like it on Ryan Rawlison and the Rebels?
Yeah. Is there a money line in Vegas?
Well, the money line would be very high, wouldn't it? Where would you have to set the – no, seriously, where would you set this money line if you're
– it'd be like 850, wouldn't it?
No. No, a one baseball game at 8-1?
Rawlison versus a freshman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the freshman doesn't have to hit Rawlison.
4.5-1?
I mean, at that number, I take Tennessee just for the value, but.
I guess.
It puts pressure on Ole Miss to get off to a good start. Seriously. I mean, I get to stay in the moment every day, but it's very hard to do when you look up and a team that's not very good is across from the dugout and you know what's ahead the next few weeks. You go to A&M. You've got at Arkansas. I mean, Arkansas is back here. You go to State, Vanderbilt's later. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a lot of on this weekend all of a sudden.
I hate being this guy because it's a jerk thing to say, and I don't quite mean it literally, but I kind of do. They need to sweep.
I've told myself I'll never say a 2-1 week in the SEC is a bad week.
And I won't. Oh, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. 2-1 is fine. Nothing's wrong.
If we reconvene on Monday but and Ole Miss says 1-2, I'll say, yeah, it was good. Good job. But was that a great job?
And what if you went 1-2?
Bad.
You'd have to make one up somewhere or two up.
Yeah. 1-2 would be a big missed opportunity. Look.
When you know what's coming next week, you're going to have a really, really tough series in College Station.
You know what's coming for the next 9 weeks.
That's true.
You know what's coming for the next – you know what's coming in 11, 12 weeks.
Yeah.
When that committee sits down and they do the, okay, we got to spread the game around. And how do we put regionals? And frankly, this team, where are they right now, 17-1?
They're 17-1.
They're ranked
– number six.
What's their RPI?
It's too early to tell. Okay. I don't know. I don't care.
Okay. Right now, they're in the conversation for a super regional.
They would be,
for a national seed.
They would get a national seed were it today.
So that's what you're playing for. So, yes, anything less than two is a disappointment, and frankly, three is what they need. You probably need 18 SEC wins
to be national seed?
Yes.
Yeah, minimum. That's the bar, and then anything over that would help. I mean, Ole Miss has went 19-11 and 20-10 before and not got national seeds. They got their national seed at 18-12 in 2005.
Look, I haven't watched this team much. I've watched a little. I've watched a little more than you might think I have, but I don't sit and watch inning after inning after inning because there's no point, especially early. They look better to me. They look more mature to me. They look more poised to me. I thought last year there were some times when I would just flip them on the computer and I thought they looked kind of rattled, frankly. Is that fair? I don't know. And if someone came out and fought me on that and said they were never rattled, I'd say, okay, I concede. But that's what they kind of looked like to me. This team doesn't ever really look rattled. They look kind of calm. They have a good approach. They pitch the hell out of it. Got guys who can take it out of the ballpark. We'll see whether they can hit high-level SEC pitching. Breaking news, not many people hit high-level SEC pitching. That's why it's high-level SEC pitching that goes early in the draft. You know, there's going to be a lot of the kid for Florida, the kid for Auburn, Rollison. There are going to be a lot of teams that face those guys on a Friday night and look away and have one run and six hits. That's going to happen. So, that sometimes people over-dramatize that. It's like, oh, yeah, they're great pitchers for a reason. But this team looks more resilient to me than last year's team, which I didn't think from the outside looking in was a particularly mentally tough group.
Yeah, because half the lineup was freshmen, and they were acting like freshmen.
And freshmen facing adversity for the first time. Freshmen who had dominated the high school level. Freshmen who had dominated the
summer stuff.
Travel stuff.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're seeing one good arm followed by another good arm followed by another good arm. And scouting that has scouted you, and hey, I found a hole in a swing. Let's attack the hell out of it. Here we go. And new pitchers that can. And now you're having to adjust, and that's very hard at 18, 19 years old with 6,000 people in a stadium yelling at you.
From an offensive standpoint, I don't know that I've – I mean, seriously, I mean, going into the night, I'm not really setting undue pressure or anything. I don't know that I've seen an offense this bad in the SEC statistically in every category. In – total bases, they're next to last in the league. On base percentage, 12th. Slugging, 13th. I mean, they do nothing well. There's not like that sneaky category where you look up and go, oh, well, they're 7th in that. They're okay. No, it's dead last in everything. Except at bats and plate appearances. They've actually got more opportunities to get bases and still haven't done it. Must have played more games. I don't know. But either way, just weird. We'll see you tonight, 7 o'clock. Another pressure on Ole Miss is to get three games in. The absolute last thing you'd want to do was end up 1-1 out of this dang weekend because you had something rained out. So today the rain looks like it slacks off a little by mid-afternoon, but there's still some decent percentages all night. Tomorrow is gorgeous, it appears, and then Sunday it's kind of changed back and forth. I don't know where we're sitting at right now with Sunday.
I'm trying to pull it up as we speak. 10-day, let's see. My computer hates me, and this app hates me.
Not having much luck.
Well, it just, there's rain coming as we tape this. It's 9:10. I just got a notification on my phone that rain starts in 8 minutes.
The weather app says 90% at 10, 11, 12. Basically, it slacks off around 3 or 4, and then is good till about 8, and then there's a 30% chance. They might actually sneak it in tonight. Saturday looks fine, and then Sunday's sort of hit or miss, it appears.
I would be tempted if I were them. You and I talked about this yesterday. There's a lot of people that are criticizing what happened last week. I don't. The process that reached that decision was a good process. The forecast called for very difficult opportunity to get that game in on Saturday. Yeah. Turns out they could have gotten the game in. If you do the right process, that's why great coaches, let's make this back about sports a minute, right? Nick Saban, I think we can all, whether you love him or hate him or you think that they're out just giving players Mercedes or whatever, I think you can give credit where credit's due that he has always been process-oriented. And he says if you follow the process enough, it'll work out. Now, does it always work out? No. If you follow the process in a decision-making thing, like the Ole Miss just did in this basketball search, I think they had a process. I think they had a laid-out process. I think they followed the process. They landed a good coach. They kicked the tires on Mike White. They kicked the tires on Thad Matta. I'm not convinced they really kicked tires on Tom Crean. I'm not convinced they kicked them hard. I think they got some conflicting information and moved on and then got into that group that was a more realistic group. If you look at this and the goal is, hey, let's get three games in. They look okay for tonight starting at 7. Look okay. Got to go quick. And then Saturday.
But see, here's the you.
Saturday, you're
know, good Saturday.
You know you can get one. Although, yeah, you're good Saturday, and then Sunday, you're okay. The chance of rain though is 90%. They're saying later in the day, but occasional rain in the afternoon.
See, I'd schedule a doubleheader tomorrow, and then play as much possible today in case you need Sunday.
Can you play the game? Can you start a game Friday and finish it Sunday?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead and just leave it hanging and start the doubleheader?
You might have to finish that one and then, but either way, you're just trying to get 17 innings in. I don't care what order we do gotcha. It in. So, yeah. But you need to start that today, in my opinion, to make it more. Yeah, I think you stay with today, and then I would schedule a doubleheader tomorrow just to give yourself some leeway there. We'll see. I have not heard that been talked about at this point. So, we'll update you if we do here. SEC with a really good showing on day one of the NCAA tournament. Kentucky wins. Alabama wins. Florida wins. I'm forgetting one or two. They went 5-0, right? 4-0?
I think the league.
Everybody won.
Everybody won.
Yeah. Arkansas? They play today.
They play today, don't they?
I think so. I didn't see an Arkansas score.
Auburn plays today. Arkansas plays today. Missouri plays today.
A&M.
A&M plays today. So they went 4-0 and they have four more.
That's it. Kentucky, Florida, Alabama, Tennessee. Yes.
Tennessee looked really good.
Against Wright State.
Sexton looked like a damn stud.
Kentucky gets the break. They beat Davidson and now get Buffalo instead of Arizona. I think Loyola's in that part of that bracket too. Beat Miami. So I think the three's already gone.
Way of working out for Big Blue.
The three and the four have already gone then in that.
I think that's right.
The three and the six. I don't know. Either way. Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Three and the six are gone.
Yeah.
It's Alabama's first tournament win, and it was like 12 years.
Really?
Something like that.
That game was close when I watched it. I didn't see the end of it.
Sexton took over.
He's good.
Oh, he's had a great March. He's made money for himself.
Oklahoma did not look good. Got bounced by Rhodey.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought would happen. They didn't belong in the tournament. Let me rephrase that. They were too good for the tournament. Sorry.
She's not going to Alabama. Oh, no, Oklahoma, sorry. She's not going to Alabama. I got them mixed up.
Not going to Alabama.
I'd kind of laugh at that, honestly. But
Oklahoma's in the mix. We got family ties to Alabama.
I haven't visited anybody yet, though.
Nope. Both of my parents have degrees from Alabama.
I know. Okay. No. More.
I grew up an Alabama fan.
Loosely, but yes.
Loosely.
Very loose.
Yep.
You asked me for golf scores yesterday. You were in on Tiger Woods on a Thursday at Bay Hill.
I'm not alone.
We discussed golf at Bay Hill, of all places, on Thursday.
I saw he was 3 or 4 under at one point.
He was.
And then I lost track of it because I was working on that story.
He got to 4, got to 3, I think, made a double bogey, hit a really bad shot, got back to, went back to 1, and then birdied 3 coming in. He's tied for 4th at 4 under after day 1.
Good for him. Yeah, boom. I was kind of following it, and then
he's now the favorite to win the Masters, betting favorite.
I got off the phone with my last interview for that story, and I was like, okay, I need to focus.
Yeah,
I never went back and looked.
He's playing really well. I mean,
betting favorite for the Masters.
He's the betting favorite at the Masters. And again, it's kind of like Alabama football. They get a lot of bets, so Vegas has to sort of inflate it a little bit.
Sure.
But,
well, it tells you that, like I've told you, I am a great, I don't know why, for whatever reason, this is true, man. I mean, if you ever want to bounce it off me, I am, for whatever reason, an incredible barometer on golf popularity.
Must be some low scores out there as well. Today, I mean, Henrik Stenson's actually leading the tournament for 64 yesterday. That's pretty impressive. But Rory McIlroy already on the course today. He's 2 under through 7 holes in his second round. He's playing well. If you're just kind of interested in a tournament, this is kind of a neat one because Rory's playing well. Tiger's playing well. It's Arnold Palmer's tournament. They're doing a lot of Arnold Palmer stuff.
Sure.
Not necessarily golf, just history stuff. Curtis Strange and Marco Mira. Two older golfers.
Yeah.
We're on No Laying Ups podcast this week together, telling stories through their career, just good human interest stories. If anybody's interested, it's pretty good stuff as they are just talking and telling jokes and going back and different things from their career. No Laying Ups done a heck of a job building a podcast. I have to give them a credit. That's a guy when he first got started was just sort of really, really golf centric. Didn't branch out at all. I think Chris Solomon, the main guy, and Jeffrey exchanged some DMs on how to sort of kind of get podcasts set up and knock some stuff off of each other. And now there's well over 100,000 Twitter followers and blowing up as a podcast. I mean, just taking off. So
I'll give us this. We were ahead of the curve.
Soli's, he's quit his job. He is just a golf media podcast pro-am player now. That's what he does. He travels the world and plays free golf. He's sponsored by Callaway and does podcast. And I'm sure Callaway has opened that door to Lord knows what from a podcast standpoint. But he also is just kind of buddies with some players. Like he and Rory McIlroy are sort of kind of friends. So like, you know, we talked about this forever. Golf media has changed so much because it's those kind of guys that are getting the player interviews, getting the players to open up about different things. It's not mainstream media even in the slightest anymore. That sport's over from a mainstream media standpoint.
Yeah, the mainstream media wants to focus on controversies and stuff, and the players,
they get turned off so fast.
Well,
that.
The players, think about it in golf. You can see them. They're wearing just clothes.
Yeah,
there's no helmet. They're not armored up. They hit a ball and they walk.
They do.
So you got to be able to talk about them, because you know. Otherwise, it's a beautiful shot. You talk about the shot, then you say, okay, well now he's got to walk 195 yards, right, left, right, left, and we got to talk about something. And so these guys, the smart ones, are the ones that let people into them, into their lives, just enough that they feel like they know them.
It's
what the NBA does so well.
There's some similarities there because it becomes personalities, rivalries, storylines. Look. I'm in this minority, but it's a very small minority that goes, hey, show me how he kind of turned that over and hit the shot and all this technical stuff. I don't give a crap. Show me really cool things that I can't do, and then tell me about that dude. That's all I want to know.
Sure.
That's it.
Well, you can do both. You can.
I don't need to know how he kept that under the wind and all that crap.
That's one of the things I love about some of the NBA. The NBA is great about this. The NBA, they'll do all the StatCat stuff, and they'll show you how pick and roll developed and stuff, but then they'll tell me about what this guy's like off the floor. What was his motivation? What was his dad? What was his, you know, all that stuff. That's what you want to know. The sports that get locked up, it's a mistake. It's an error. It really is. It's bad. Like yesterday, I talked to a whole lot of people for that story on Kermit Davis. They got the feedback on his girls. That's where feedback came from. I talked to John Brady.
People.
I talked to one of his assistant coaches.
People.
people.
They want to know about the guy. What's he like as a person? I get a whole lot of people going, why do you like Andy so much? I'll tell you why I like Andy so much. I covered Andy for 10 years, and we had a lot of personal conversations. I kind of feel like I know the guy. Not the coach. I don't play basketball. He's not my coach. He's not throwing chairs at me. Probably wanted to a time or two, but you know what I mean? I mean, you get to know people. It's a mistake when people do the I'm locked down, I'm not going to let anybody in. One of the reasons I think Tiger Woods is so interesting is that now he's kind of let – he knows, everybody knows. He had indiscretions in his marriage. He had health issues. He had the DUI. He had all these issues, and people now know, you know what? Tiger Woods is not a robot. He's not a machine. He's a human being, and now he's trying to come back from all this adversity and fulfill his potential, and you can't help but cheer for him.
Let me ask you this. Is it because of what I'm talking about, how it's not the mainstream media that moves the needle in golf whatsoever? They're non-existent for the most part, other than a couple guys. Why do you think Tiger has been able to so quickly move past that peeled DUI thing? Because that would have stayed behind a lot of athletes for a while, is this, hey, I've got to always mention this, and it is completely gone.
Because I think people, we live in a forgiving society.
Yeah.
We're all flawed. Man, we all make stupid decisions all the time. We just don't happen to do them under that microscope. Who would say that Tiger Woods hasn't paid for his mistakes?
Mm-hmm.
And so you cheer for him. He's a human. He's not a robot. And early in his career, I felt he was somewhat marketed as a robot. Well, we're not interested in robots. We're interested in people.
Well, he was closed off as a human for years and years and years and years and years.
But now he's not. No. You feel like, you know, he walking down the greens the other day.
Yeah, he's got some Phil Mickelson in him all of a sudden.
He was looking at people, kind of waved, smiled.
Yeah.
It's okay. You smiling is not going to impact the next putt. It's not. It's It's not going to impact anything. It's okay. And I think what's happened is now people like me, and again, man, for whatever reason, I don't understand it. I'm a barometer on golf. I like golf. I do. I wish I had all that stuff. I'm a barometer on it. I used to watch him, and I'd be like, man, I can't wait to cheer for the dude against Tiger. I can't wait. And people would say it's because he's black. I'm like, no, it's not because he's black. Are you kidding? I mean, go up to my son's room. That's stupid. That's dumb. It's not because he's black. It's because he's a robot. He won't let anybody in. And now I know him, and now he comes down the back nine the other day, and he's going up for that putt, and I'm like, man, that's a really hard putt, but that would be so cool if that went in. And when the other dude putted it and it rolled back down, I was like, oh, see, they're all feeling Tiger. Even though I really didn't understand because I'd been flipping between games, I really didn't understand. At that moment, I thought that was the dude he was chasing. And I thought, ooh, they're all freaking out because the Tiger. Isn't this fun? Isn't this fun?
Well, no. See, even for golf fans or sports fans, it's a time machine for everybody right now. They're getting Tiger back. They're getting an atmosphere that nobody else can do except him. The roars are different. The crowd volume is different. I mean, Rory McIlroy's been the number one player in the world. He's got four majors. I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
He is sort of one of the Tigers of this generation.
Yeah.
He made a mention when he played with him a couple weeks ago, and this wasn't in a major or anything. It's just in a tournament. He said that he thought the crowds on you, everybody yelling, just the environment that Tiger has to play in.
Yeah.
He said that he thinks it costs Tiger two strokes a tournament or a half a stroke a round just dealing with all of it. And to the point you're making, you still to this day, even at whatever his age is, 42, whatever he is, 40, getting into that last pairing on a Sunday with Tiger Woods is going to freak dudes out.
Of course.
They're going to play tight with Tiger in the final pairing.
I mean, you're asking me, what do I want to see? Oh, I'll tell you exactly what I want to see. I want to see Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy tied on the leaderboard going down the back nine on Sunday in Augusta. And someone like me who plays golf once every 20 years, who likes the sport, I watch it. I mean, I like watching you guys hit. I played with
Jonathan Randall.
Yeah, Jonathan the other day. And I'm like, that's fun. This is, wow, look at that shot. I mean, I couldn't do that. Yeah. I mean, I like that. But I'm a sports fan in that vein. I mean, if LeBron's on TV and LeBron's going off, I stay. When Kobe was going off, it's Kobe. I mean, there are people that are transcendent in sport. And Tiger Woods is one of those people. And, yeah, I want to see him. And now, unlike was it 10 years ago when he was winning?
Yeah.
Now I want to see him win. If you told me, hey, you can control it, does Tiger Woods win the Masters?
Yeah.
Yes, but not by running away.
No, let's get drama.
I want some damn drama, and I want to cheer for him, and I think it'll be cool. And here's the difference: I think you'll see an emotional Tiger Woods if and when it happens. I think he'll let people in on how hard this has been, and I think we can all relate to that deep down.
Yeah, I don't know if he's winning a major this year. He's going to win a tournament this year. He's going to win again. He's not done. He's going to get number 80. He's got 79 career wins. Might be this week. I mean,
I hope he does, because we're, what, 2 weeks away or so from the Masters?
Yeah, it's April 5th through 8th, I believe. Yes,
3 weeks. I hope he keeps this up, because people like me who normally – I mean, look, I'll look at a leaderboard on the internet or whatnot on Thursday of the Masters. Now, I'll probably kind of watch it. But I'm watching for him. And everybody goes, well, that's not really golf. Well, it's golf to me. Yeah. And then I get to see some of the other guys. If I'm a professional golfer today, as much as it's easier to win when he's not around, I want him around. I want him on top of the leaderboard. I want exposure. I want people watching, because now they're going to see me. If I get to play with him, oh, well, who's this other cat with Tiger? Because the casual golf fan, I promise you guys that are golf aficionados out there, are going to be saying, so who's the guy playing with Tiger right there? He's kind of good. That's kind of fun. And then, if that dude's smart, he's letting people in. Here's who I am. Here's where I came from. Here's my story. Blah, blah, blah. And that's where your podcast example and stuff, that's where guys are smart. NBA has done a lot of this, like Wojciechowski and Chris Mannix, and some of these people have these podcast with NBA people, and they really open up and let people know them, and it's smart.
Well, you know, this group of media, as we close in a second, is this group of media is kind of getting this Tiger for the first time in person and seeing this. Like, they were amazed the other day. I guess it was at Bay Hill. I don't think it was last week. And I guess it was yesterday. Tiger finished his round, and he walked. He got done with 18 or number 9, because they finished on number 9. And he was walking back to the clubhouse, wherever, and he walked behind the driving range. And they said, you know, it's from pros, guys there that won majors and all this stuff. And as they were hitting and Tiger started walking behind them, every one of them turned around and watched him. And he said, this is weird. I mean, it's a strange dynamic where it's a guy who hasn't won in 5 years. And they're scared of him. They're fearful of him in a way from a competition level right now.
It'd be like if Babe Ruth walked onto a baseball field right now.
Everybody kind of goes, yeah.
If Babe Ruth walked onto the Dodgers Angels field right now in his 30s, Mike Trout would stop what he was doing, but, oh, there's Babe Ruth. And people go, that's a stupid example. Babe Ruth is dead. I'm telling you, Tiger Woods is as big in golf as Babe Ruth.
You think the guys on court 19 at Wimbledon turn around when Federer walks by?
You're damn right they do. And they damn sure should, because if you take Federer off, I don't know that sport exists right now. And I like tennis.
Yeah.
But you have to have personalities. I was talking Tommy Prater's. We're going on too long. I'm sorry.
It's fine.
Tommy Prater's coming on the Beer Garden next week. We're going to talk some NASCAR.
Yeah.
Tommy's life has been built around auto racing.
Yeah.
It's his life.
Great dude. Love Tommy.
His son's on the Busch Series. He was telling me yesterday, he called me. He goes, hey, I just had some lunch with some guys who hate you. And I said, well, thanks for telling me. And he goes, no. He goes, that's good. He goes, you've been gone what? I said, about 10 years. And he said, they're still talking about your radio show. They're still talking. And I said, well, that's great. That means I did my job. And so we were talking, and I said, hey, can you come on and talk NASCAR? He goes, are there 10 people who care? And I'm like, well, I'm sure there are. And he goes, you know, I said, isn't it funny, man? Because it wasn't that long ago that NASCAR resonated. And there were people on NASCAR, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Jeff Gordon, et cetera, who moved the needle. And now there are not people on NASCAR, except any guys that are out there that are aficionados, you're going to disagree, but I'm talking about mainstream, people like me.
Yeah.
It doesn't register. It doesn't exist. I couldn't tell you who won Daytona last week. Could you?
No. No clue.
10 years ago, you said, who won Daytona? I could tell you.
Yeah.
And so sports die off based on people. And how you market and all of that stuff's very important. And it's the challenge. It's the challenge in this society that we live in now, where everything is on demand. You can watch everything on your device. You can see, you can stream everything, all that stuff. If you don't find a way to market people, not the sport, not all that stuff. People, it's very, very hard.
Baseball has done differently. They've gone regional, and that's been enough. The two sports that have done the best job of being flexible to today's climate is golf and basketball.
Yes, no question. Yes.
The best marketing people to go, okay, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And it's going to work. We're fine. Sure. All good.
Absolutely.
Money's there.
There's no question about it.
So,
do you feel like you kind of know Steph Curry?
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, you kind of know Russell Westbrook. You kind of know Kevin Durant, James Harden, LeBron.
Well, even beyond them, I mean, I watch no NBA, none. Never turn it on, and I can name 75 basketball players if I had to.
If I say a player's name, you can name the team.
You give me half an hour and a list of paper, I can name 75 basketball players.
And you don't watch the NBA?
No, none.
There you go. Some people that go, that sport's whatever. I'm like, no, that sport's strong, man. They're making a ton of money. They are making a ton of money. Damian Lillard cannot walk the streets of New York without people recognizing him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Chris Bryant would be recognized on the streets of New York.
No, he wouldn't.
Last as we close, you want a little, this is what's coming.
Okay.
This is probably not Ole Miss related, but it could be. Who knows? This is according to Jeff Goodman, ESPN. Jeff's very good. 8 Pittsburgh men's basketball players, Chase, will receive their release to transfer elsewhere today, sources tell ESPN. Story coming. 8.
Including Parker Stewart.
Including Parker Stewart, who I expect will transfer to Memphis.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Huh, close to home, sort of. All right. Thanks to Keith. Long show today. Hope you enjoyed. A lot of podcasts this week, so should take care of you if you got any driving to do this weekend. And we'll be back on Monday. Talk to you then.